Welcome to Dear Prudence. I'm your Prudence, Janae Desmond-Harris. Today, we'll be offering advice to a friend who hates that they always have to initiate plans, a stepmother dreading the idea of her entitled stepdaughters moving in, and someone who lost a bunch of weight and is obsessed with using that fact to make the other moms at school feel really terrible. Here to help me out is Anna Sale. She's the author of Let's Talk About Hard Things and the host of Death, Sex, and Money, the award-winning podcast about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. In case you haven't already heard, you probably have, it recently found a new home here at Slate. Welcome to the show and welcome to Slate, Anna.
I'm so glad to be here with you on both fronts.
We're so delighted to have you. I've been wanting to hear your advice for so long. And we'll start out with asking you for one piece of unsolicited advice.
I think it's always good advice to take a beat. I think I've learned this from making podcasts, and it's helped me in my life, that if you just slow it down a minute, it helps everything.
So like something happens, someone pisses you off, you want to send an email, just don't.
Yeah. Just take a beat. You can still send the email.
Yeah.
But often, you know, for me, the first reaction that I come up with is often like coming out of sort of old muscle memory and reactiveness. Mm-hmm. And if I take a beat, then I can see like, oh, how much of this is about the actual situation and how much of this am I like bringing a whole truckload of old scars?
I love that idea. I mean, of course, if you aren't as mature or evolved during the beat, you just get more wound up and crazy, right? but yeah, take a beat and use it well to try to get to a better place. And also, if you take any really long pauses during this episode, we'll know that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm really pissed and trying to figure out what to say next.
Okay, Anna and I will dive into your questions after a short break. Can't get enough Dear Prudence? Then you should definitely join Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. You'll get to hear me answer an extra question every week just for members. With your subscription, you get ad-free listening across the Slate network and unlimited reading on the Slate site, including all Dear Prudence columns, past and present. Go to slate.com/PrudyPlus to sign up. It's just $15 for your first 3 months. Again, that's slate.com/PrudyPlus. Welcome back. You're listening to Dear Prudence, and I'm here with Anna Sale. Let's get started with our first letter. It's titled Friend Zone.
I have what I hear is a common problem. I'm the friend who reaches out everywhere I go. I have a lot of social energy, I guess. I'm not really that extroverted, but I find making plans and spending time with people pretty easy, and I make a real effort to check in with and prioritize time with my friends. I feel well-liked by my social circle, but I also see that everyone around me knows I'll initiate plans or throw a party sometime soon, so they'll just catch me then. I try not to bug people or wear out my welcome. I just like to see my close friends every few weeks or so for a movie night or a hike or coffee catch-up. Additionally, I'm self-employed with no kids, and my partner is very introverted, so I've got a lot of time and flexibility on my hands. I genuinely like to help people out and often find that I'm the perfect person to ask to let your dog out when you have to work late or to come help with a project. Most of the time, I'm fine with this dynamic. I think these are good qualities to have, and I'm proud to put a lot of effort into being a good friend. I like being helpful. And I always get loving feedback about how grateful people are that I can be the initiator they can't be. But it does get old from time to time. I sometimes want people to miss me and to initiate plans and to crave my company. I don't like the idea of just stepping back and waiting to see who reaches out. I've lost friends and hurt my own feelings by manufacturing distance that I didn't want in the first place. But I struggle to believe that I deserve for other people that I don't have a formal commitment with to change their behavior for me. If we were closer, we'd be closer, right? Can you help me come up with some words to gently express to the people I care about that I could use some prioritization coming my way from time to time? I've tried to drop hints and make sure people know I'm available, but it doesn't seem to work.
Anna, are you a plan initiator or an invitation acceptor?
I can be both. And I just want to say to this letter writer, like, I love the camp counselor energy mm-hmm. you bring into the world. Like, the world would stop turning if there weren't people like you.
Friendship groups would fall apart.
They would fall apart. Like, and it's such an undervalued labor that happens in the world. And I get the feelings of hurt and also rage mm-hmm. that can build up when you notice that you're doing this often. To answer your first question, Janae, with my nuclear family, with my kids and my husband, I am definitely this letter writer. I am the one who's like, let's keep this train going.
Yeah.
But because I have kids and a husband, like, in my long friendships and with my family of origin, I'm definitely the one who, like, doesn't follow up in the text chain. So I'm both and.
I think I'm a little bit in the same place right now. I definitely used to be the social coordinator. When I lived in DC and I was single, I was always like, everybody, we need to get there before 9:30 when it's free to get in. How many people are on the reservation? Is everyone awake? It's time to get to brunch. And that's definitely not my lifestyle right now. And yeah, I think I am more of an invitation acceptor at this point. And thinking about how that's changed over the course of my life, and I'm sure it's changed for you too, makes me think about a theory that I have. I actually have a large theory about the kind of gripe in this letter. Tell me what you think about it. I think in friendship, everyone has a different role to play because everyone has a different personality, a different amount of energy, a different stage of life that they're in, a different background, different strengths, different astrological sign, different mental health issues, different weaknesses. And I think that ideally, instead of scorekeeping about whether your friends are matching what you're doing in one particular area, it feels better to zoom out and look at the big picture and see if maybe things balance out because they may be stronger or more active in an area where you're not doing as much. So for example, some people, usually type A's, make plans. Some people, maybe more type B's, go with the flow, but they might bring a sense of fun and positivity. They might lift everyone's mood when they show up. Some people are good gift givers. Some people are good listeners. Some make a big deal about your birthday. Some show up when you're going through a hard time. I don't know if it turns out well when you want everyone to have the same strengths that you do. And especially, you have to ask whether you want to be held to that standard when it comes to the things they're good at that you might not be as good at.
I think that that's really true. People even plan in different ways. Like mm-hmm. when I first got together with my husband, like he's a real, like he trusts that he can figure it out 3 days beforehand. And I'm like, you're not going to get a good deal on the rental car if you don't plan ahead a little bit more, you know, but I've learned like if I show up 2 months early and I'm like, let's get that rental car reservation, it stresses him out. And he's like, I'm dealing with the things that are 3 days from now. Mm-hmm. So we've had to sort of figure out our own flow about planning. I think that your grand theory is apt here. And I also think we don't know exactly at what life phase the letter writer is writing from. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if there's something going on where maybe she's in a life phase where there's been a shift in the availability of her close friends mm-hmm. and their capacity to be planners.
Yep.
And maybe they've partnered or they have jobs that work differently than her flexible job. Maybe they have kids and she doesn't. And it sounds like at the root of this is like, I want to feel for the people that I care for and take care of that they care about me back.
Right.
And what she wants is for them to do that in the way that she's able to do that mm-hmm. and that she likes to do that. And they simply might not have the capacity to do that.
Right.
But I think to the exact question of like, what is the ways that I can hint at what I need? I think it's not saying, can you plan a dinner reservation for us? Instead, it's saying like, I miss you. Can we figure out some time to be together?
Yeah.
And just like start with the feeling instead of the like, I've made a dinner reservation because I miss you. Instead say, I miss you. Like, what's something we can do together? And maybe that'll sort of dig up some of the underlying stuff that's going on here.
Yeah, I was thinking kind of the easy response to this would be, we'll talk to them. Here's your script. And the script could say, hey, I noticed I'm always the one initiating plans. I wondered if you could take the lead on the next catch up. And the friends would probably do it. But something tells me that just wouldn't get to the core issue. Because like you said, the core issue is a feeling. And honestly, the most powerful thoughts in this letter that really jumped out at me were, I want people to miss me and crave my company.
I know.
And I deserve for other people to change their behavior for me. And those are like a therapy session for each statement. You know what I mean? Those are really intense feelings. And I don't think they're the kind of feelings that go away because you ask someone to do a task and they do it. Like, they're much deeper, right?
Yeah.
They require sort of some personal work, but also maybe, like you said, a different kind of connection with your friends to get that validation.
Yeah. And I also think there's a risk to even saying, like, can you do some more labor on our friendship's behalf? I will say, as somebody with two little kids and a job and a household that I'm trying to keep track of, like, if I have a friend who I know has more flexibility in their life and that's the energy they come at me with, I'm like, it makes me feel unseen. It's like, I hear you, that you are needing something from me that I'm not giving you. And also, do you see I barely end each day with my head above water? You know what I mean? And it makes me kind of be like, I feel really disconnected from this person,
right?
You know? And I think the letter writer could benefit from that, that kind of that pulling back and thinking about where their friends are. Because I thought the other line that stuck out to me, I've lost friends and hurt my own feelings by manufacturing distance that I didn't want in the first place. It's like, you have tried this before, and it seems like underlying it is this fear that if I don't like continue showing love to the people who I love, they won't love me. They will go away.
Right.
And they're not going to go away.
Right.
You might be in less touch. But that's why I just sort of saying, I miss you. Let's connect.
I also think one point related to what you said about the phase of life that you're in is that these things do change over time. So right now, letter writer, you are super not busy because you don't have kids and your husband's an introvert. There may be a time down the road when your friend's kids are older and lower maintenance and you have an incredibly stressful job or are caring for a sick spouse. Like, again, I think it's important to zoom out. A friendship is long. You have a lot of years ahead of you, and things might not feel equal now, and they might equalize like down the road at some point if these are people you really care about. Maybe there's a few years of you doing this, and then later on in life, someone else takes the lead when it comes to planning because you don't have the capacity you have now.
And I really think for the season you're in, like, I feel like Seth Rogen is such a hero with like how he has dealt with his time while his friends are raising small kids. Like, you could start a like bong pottery company in your spare time and go on Instagram. Like, I love the way he talks about the freedom that comes with not having kids and what he's been able to sort of do artistically and creatively that his friends who are busy raising kids, like, they don't get to do.
Yeah.
So I think that there's ways that you can create a lot of joy and connection, maybe in some new relationships or in a relationship with yourself, instead of focusing on the ways that you feel like the connections that you have had that have taken a lot of effort on your behalf, instead of only focusing on that.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Dear Prudence Show, and when we come back, we'll be reading more of your letters. Stay with us. Welcome back to Dear Prudence. I'm here with my guest, Anna Sale, to answer your letters, and the next one is titled, Formerly Frumpy.
I recently lost a lot of weight, going from overweight to the bottom end of the healthy range, and it's released a lot of relational aggression between me and the other woman at my daughter's preschool. It's a fancy preschool where the women often have high-powered jobs, and although I had tried to be friends with some of the women when my kid arrived, they were always too busy. Oh, try me again in the new year. I'd suspected it was because I was fat and frumpy and had a low-status job and lived in a small house. But didn't have any proof. Except recently, a few of the women have become outright mean to me. One cut directly between me and my husband, boxing me out. Another always discusses in front of me the trips she goes on with the other moms. She's always gone on them, but has only recently started mentioning it. My response hasn't been great. Lately, I've been wearing more makeup, dressing in form-fitting clothes, talking to the dads and laughing at their jokes, etc. I've also been humble bragging about my weight. It's really hard getting hassled so much by men on the street. I am so not used to it. My one mom friend says there's a rumor that I've gotten on Ozempic. I didn't, which I think shows I'm successfully getting under people's skins. I can't help feeling I'm playing with fire and that my kids' happiness is at stake. The school goes through eighth grade, and hopefully I'll be in some of these women's lives for the next decade. At the same time, I just don't like these women. I don't care if they freeze me out or spread rumors about me. I just want to hurt them the way they hurt me 2 years ago, when it would have cost them so little effort to be nice to me. My husband is agnostic. He's totally willing to find a new school if things go bad. My therapist wants me to focus on healing my inner child and is justifiably concerned about me putting too much of my self-worth into my looks, which could obviously change at any moment. But my perspective is, who knows how long I'll stay thin, so I might as well enjoy myself. Moreover, I genuinely don't know how to stop. Every time I'm with these women, I just want to hurt them. And frankly, now that I know their weak spot, their weight and looks, it's so easy. Literally any mention of weight, exercise, dress, etc., brings them visible pain and starts them stammering and flailing. Then I offer them some facile reassurances, which gives me plausible deniability. It feels remarkably like being in Proust's novel. Yes, I'm an adjunct professor. I assume at some point the kids will be old enough that they can socialize without the parents, which will be a relief. But until then, I'm stuck. So what do I do? Is there some protocol for teaching yourself to be nice to people you don't respect, who are now wholly in your power?
And I'm dying to hear what you have to say, because during the reading of this letter, you were shaking your head, holding your head in your hands, letting go only to type furiously.
I mean, there is so much, like, now that I know their weak spots,
yeah,
and this desire to hurt them. And I can tell, letter writer, that you really feel like these women excluded you, that they did not treat you with respect, mm-hmm. that they saw you as less than. I want to just offer the possibility that that might not be happening. That might not have happened.
Right. Let's unpack it allegation by allegation.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's start at the top. The other moms had high-powered jobs. They were working, who knows, 50, 60 hours a week. But you've decided the reason they couldn't make spontaneous plans with you is because you were frumpy.
And have a low-status job and a smaller house.
Right.
And I get, like, the class dynamics at play at school, pick-up and drop-off are intense. However, there's also the possibility, like when I think about my social encounters at drop-off, I have kids in elementary school, it's like you are hitting me right at that moment in the day when mm-hmm. like my internal to-do list is like as hectic
right.
as it could possibly be. So I am not my best social self. Mm-hmm. And so I think it could be that these moms excluded you intentionally. That might be. It also could be that these moms maybe knew each other from preschool. They have like deeper history. Maybe mm-hmm. they, you know, who knows, like what their relationships are that preceded you sort of noticing that they were connected in ways that you didn't feel included.
Right.
I just thought having a body transformation is a big deal. And noticing that people notice you and treat you differently is a big deal.
Yeah, definitely. And the trauma of being treated poorly because yeah. your body wasn't what society wanted it to be before is a big deal.
Yeah. And I don't know how long, you know, you've been in your body your whole life. And I don't know how often you have felt unseen. But it feels like the ferocity of the resentment and anger at the moms at pick up and drop off seems like it's about more than just these particular mm-hmm. moms.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I was like... It seems like you are creating some drama.
Well, I have to say, my first reaction was, this is probably one of the most honest letters I've ever read. So I always say when people are like, how do you know which letters are fake? I say, well, they're all kind of fake because they all really only tell one person's side of the story. And the person's always making themselves look good and putting themselves in the positive light. Not this person. I mean,
I got some sharp elbows and I want to cut them.
Yeah, she said, I love being an asshole and hurting people. Here's why. So I do appreciate the honesty. Like, I love that you're in touch with your feelings about this. I guess I would just ask letter writer, is this making you happy? Obviously, it's not, right? You say that it makes you feel good to make the other moms feel bad. But this doesn't sound like a letter written by someone who feels good. Mm. So I wonder if you're in this new body that you like, you're doing your makeup, you like your clothes. It feels like a wasted opportunity to celebrate and enjoy and be happy about the way you look. And I don't know if that means going out with your husband. I don't know if it means taking a bunch of pictures, putting on Instagram, TikTok, trying to become an influencer. I mean, just looking in the mirror every day and doing affirmations. But I worry that you're wasting this period of time in which you feel good about yourself physically by trying to make these women feel terrible. And it's probably not working. And they might not even be aware of all the dynamics that are going on. It feels like a lot of energy that could be redirected to actually make you happy, which is what I want for you. And I just think we should think about whether there are other ways to get there.
And I thought it was interesting. The letter writer told us what the therapist's advice was. Heal, focus on connecting to your inner child and healing your inner child. The husband says, if necessary, we can switch schools.
Don't switch schools over this, because there's just going to be another set of moms at pickup who are exactly the same. I mean, I think we can both agree, respectfully, this letter writer is someone who's going to find pain and offense wherever they go because of what the therapist mentioned about the inner child or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is like, they didn't care about me before, and now they care about me because I'm in a different body. Mm-hmm. And there's that fear that sort of folded in about, I don't know how long this body's going to last.
Right. It could change at any minute. So I want to make the most of it by being the biggest asshole possible.
Yeah. You get to have righteous anger about how that's screwed up, like about not feeling seen before you radically changed your body. Yeah. I just think it's going to be wasted energy to focus your wrath on them, and also the powerful feeling you have of hitting them at what you think you've identified as their vulnerable spots, because there could be the possibility that they're just like not even clued in. And then if you try to hurt them, like, and they don't even notice, like, it's just it's kind of like restart the whole cycle all over again.
I mean, it could be that in this incident where you believe that the woman cut directly between you and her husband and boxed you out, she could have just been like, I need to talk to my husband, and this woman with tons of makeup on is weirdly close to him and he's uncomfortable. Let me protect him. There's just a lot of different narratives that could be going on in their head. And again, it feels like not the best use of energy to try to change their thoughts and feelings when we're really not even sure what their thoughts and feelings are in the first place. And this is just a thought that I have. I know this is kind of hard to really feel, but I've come to over the years. I get a lot of comfort from the idea that if someone is a truly awful person, their punishment is that they have to live with the kind of person they are. It doesn't mean that they're going to be ugly or they're going to be poor or people are going to be mean to them, because life isn't fair and horrible people get great opportunities and have comfortable lives. But at the end of the day, they have to live with being a terrible person. And I get some peace just from knowing that's their punishment and I don't have to add to it. So you could maybe think about that.
I think that's said really well. And I would just say it a different way. It seems like the letter writer is kind of trying to reproduce like some of the dynamics of middle school. And I would just ask the letter writer to consider, like, were you happy in middle school?
Yeah.
I mean, like, middle school is suffering because there's so much like people jockeying for hierarchy and being mean to each other and feeling really crummy inside.
Right.
And it sounds like that's the dynamic that you're leaning into instead of like, I don't know. What else could you be thinking about when you're like leaving your kids at school and have some time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, also, I'm sure you have friends who were great to you and supportive to you before you lost the weight. Where are they? Are they getting any energy right now? Mm. Can we maybe have dad do pickup so you can push these women aside and put your focus on the friends who've always been there for you? Just a thought.
Ooh, I love that.
Just a thought.
I love that thought.
Yeah.
Or even like a picnic blanket in a novel.
Just get, you
know? Lean into that adjunct professorness. You love reading.
Exactly. Focus on your students. Yeah. I don't want you out here trying to win by flirting with people's husbands at pickup. You have one life. You have maybe a few years with this body that you're enjoying. Do something that makes you happy instead of doing something that makes other people sad.
Well said.
This is Dear Prudence. We need to take a break, but when we come back, more letters from you and advice from us. Stay tuned. I'm Janae, and you're listening to Dear Prudence. Anna and I are about to tackle our last letter for the day. Anna, are you ready?
Ready.
This letter is titled Guest Room.
I'm very lucky to have bought my 3-bedroom, 2-bath house when I did, because the high living cost in my area would have killed me otherwise. My fiancé and I have been in a long-distance relationship across the state because he had his 2 teenage daughters to care for. When they graduated high school, he permanently moved in here with me. His work was closing his old local location, and he wanted to stop renting. Despite having parents with modest means, the girls grew up in an extremely affluent area and bought into toxic views of their peers that they are owed the sun, the sky, and all the stars for merely breathing. It has been a huge source of conflict that they expect their father to pay for everything, but he gets no say on their spending habits. They frankly do not like me because I support my partner and call them on their BS. It isn't their father's fault they didn't get to go to Bali with their friends. They could do what every person has done since the dawn of time and get a summer job. They are both college graduates currently living with their mother, but she is moving inland for work. The girls don't want to leave the state and had the bright idea to demand to move in with their father and me. I have a guest room and run my home business out of the other room. I agreed to get some twin beds and the girls could move in if they got jobs and paid rent. I honestly hoped that getting out into the real world would have burst their bubble of entitlement. Instead, they doubled down. Over the holidays, they sneered at me for daring to suggest they share a room or pay rent. My home business was just a vanity project, and their father owed them after the trauma of the divorce. My fiancé was a good and involved father who worked himself to the bone to provide for his children. His ex even agrees that their children are acting unfairly. I am ready to be done. This has disaster printed all over it. My fiancé wants to give the girls another chance. I think they have had enough chances and needed to live some unpleasant life consequences. I love my fiancé, but the big reason we have delayed our marriage is because of his legal obligations to his children. They aren't minors anymore. I don't know what else to do here. Help.
So everyone acts like marrying someone with small children would be a challenging way of having a blended family. But my strong opinion, after looking through many, many, many letters in my inbox, is that blended families with adult kids are a hugely under-discussed source of angst and stress and conflict, especially in this economy. It's really tough in there. People are not gone and independent at 18. I think it's 1 in 3 adults, 18 to 34, live in their parents' home. So if you marry someone with grown children, you might be dealing with these people for a long time, and you and your spouse might have very different feelings about their behavior, their entitlement, the desire to keep them safe and comfortable. I think people need prenups specifically about how to deal with the adults who you raised and have taken on as your stepchildren.
What would that prenup look like, Janae?
I mean, maybe like, I don't know if the prenup is the right word, but an agreement like, if they're going to live with us after age 20, they have to pay this much in rent.
Yes.
Or have to be in school, or this is how much money we're going to give them and this is how much we're not. Because, I mean, I just hate to say, but I see again and again that the parent who gave birth to the children, the parent who did not, just have very, very, very different emotional reactions, especially when the young adult is like not a pleasant human.
I felt really sad reading this letter because you get like everybody is feeling stressed and pulled and wronged in different ways with the fiance, with the dad kind of in the middle. You know, he's probably trying to make everybody feel loved and appreciated and taken care of. And he's in an impossible spot. That's the thing that I really thought, letter writer, like hearing some of your frustrations, is there's just so much potential for like the disaster waiting to happen is the triangulation that could potentially happen. Like you have clearly like articulated to your fiance, like all the ways you think that this is like his adult children are not behaving like the right kind of adults. And somehow even their mom has been consulted on the right way forward here. And the adult children have demonstrated that they don't respect your work. They do think that it's proper for them to expect to be taken care of and brought in and housed separately in the other 2 bedrooms that are available, and you make do with your business. I just think the first step has got to be like talking to your fiance about like these kids who are in your life mm-hmm. and who are in your relationship, and you can't excise them. And if they don't live with you, they're still going to be in your life, and they're going to be in your life for a long time if you do get married. So I think you've got to start with like where your partner is on what his feelings of guilt are with regards to the divorce and like what he thinks, you know, his kids need. You've got to talk to kind of understand, like, seems like the letter writer has a lot of sort of judgments around the class identity and money expectations mm-hmm. of the kids. You know, I don't know your background with money, letter writer, but it seems like might be different from the affluent neighborhood that they grew up in. And mm-hmm. and so I think it's just starting, like, if we were to revisit this question of can they live with us, what is the timeline? What kind of rent do we expect from them? And what are the conditions for living in our home? And figure that out in your relationship and then communicate that to the grown kids. So it's not just coming from you, letter writer, because if it's right. just coming from you, it is going to blow up. And you're at a point where, like, there's the potential to form a really beautiful relationship with these, like, young adults who are mm-hmm. coming of age. But right now, the way it seems like everything is sort of positioned, there's just a lot of resentment fueling the dynamics.
And I think the letter writer is being really reasonable. She's not saying they get nothing. I don't want them in my house. They're adults. They can take care of themselves. And I wonder if she really emphasizes that to her fiance, if it could help, because it's not a black or white situation. It's not that they get to move in, take over the office, get whatever they want and not pay rent, or we just send them out to the streets and hope for the best. I would want to think about what I could reasonably offer and would not have to constantly monitor. So to me, that would mm-hmm. be you two can share one room. And honestly, realistically, I wouldn't expect them to pay rent. Because mm-hmm. what's going to happen the first month? They're late on rent. They're short on rent. And suddenly you're going to be chasing them down, telling your husband to chase them down, giving them a 90-day notice. It just seems like a huge source of tension. I would rather put a time limit on it so you can live here for 2 years until you get yourselves together. And then you got to go, rather than creating a situation where you have to monitor, did you apply for a job? Did you get a job? Are you spending too much of your paycheck? Have you PayPal'd me yet? Letter writer, I don't want you to create a situation where you're policing them and stressed over their responsibility or lack thereof every week and every month.
And there's the added benefit if they're sharing a room that it kind of short circuits what could become sources of conflict of like, mm-hmm. are they allowed to have overnight guests? Like yeah. what happens, you know? And if you're sharing a room with your sibling, like you probably are less likely to bring a guy home from the bar.
Really good point. Really, really good point. That's so true.
That's interesting about not paying rent. That's it, like, what if they need the money?
Well, I don't think they do because they're okay right now. I mean, I like the idea of them paying rent, but I don't like my vision of how that's going to play out. Because again, I've read too many letters where it's my stepson said he couldn't afford rent, but he went on a trip to Mexico. Or he keeps buying these expensive video games. And if the money is not really needed, letter writer, I don't want you to have that psychological and emotional burden because it's just going to extend this conflict for the entire length of the time they're living with you. I want it to be more set it and forget it. Put the twin beds in the room, give them a key, and then it's not your problem anymore. And letter writer, you know, I always say I always try to be careful of lightly telling people to end their engagements or marriages. But if your fiance is not standing up for you when it comes to getting to keep your office and is just saying, yes, my daughter should get whatever they want, move your stuff, I want them in here with no conditions, you might want to kind of continue to delay getting married until you can get on the same page about that. Because that's going to speak to your day-to-day happiness. And it also says a lot about how much he's willing to prioritize you.
Yeah. Whether it's the relationship or it's like, look at this great house that I've landed with this woman who I've decided to be engaged to.
Yeah. Everyone move in. Yeah. New family homestead. Okay. Those are all the questions we have for this week. It's been fun as always and hopefully helpful. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Subscribe to Anna's Substack newsletter, From Somewhere with Anna Sale, and listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get your podcasts. Do you need help getting along with partners, relatives, coworkers, and people in general? Write to me. go to slate.com/prudy. That's slate.com/PRUDIE. The Dear Prudence column publishes every Thursday.
And if you'd like to hear your question answered on the podcast, we are looking for letter writers who would be comfortable recording their questions for the show. You can stay anonymous.
Dear Prudence is produced by Sierra Spragley Ricks and me, Janae Desmond Harris, with a special thanks to Maura Curry. Editorial help from Paola De Verona. Daisy Rosario is senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of audio. I'm your Dear Prudence, Janae Desmond Harris. Until next time.